us. If we are spirit and soil, the soil part needs to be reminded that it's there, which is why I think the church in the 21st century is going to have to find ways to remind us of our material reality. Anglicanism speaks to that as a sacramental tradition. When we come to church every Sunday, you're going to get not just the spoken word of God. Like, AI could conceivably write a sermon. It cannot give you communion. Well, good afternoon. It is Thursday, August 13th, 14th, one of those in the year of 2025. My name is Will Schaeferman.
And I'm Andrew Panic.
This is Accessibly Anglican, a podcast for the Anglo-curious. Welcome if you're new. We'd love to have your feedback. If you've been with us for a while, we'd love to hear what you're thinking. We turn today to the sixth and last of our series on what it means to be human in an age of AI and how Anglicanism speaks to that. Excited to get into it. Andrew, is there any last words you'd like to say before we actually dive in?
I, for one, welcome our AI overlords.
Good. Well, with that, welcome to the show. Is that good enough?
Great.
All right.
Hey, Will.
Hey, Andrew.
That's all I got.
It's good to see you today.
There's nothing going on back here.
Are you really a bot in human clone?
Oh gosh, no. If I was, I'd be way more like efficient and clever.
But you could be intentionally shielding your intellect for deceptive purposes.
I suppose that is a distinct possibility. You have hit your free limit of GPT-5. Please consider upgrading.
Fair enough. Well, I will never know. Well, today we are talking about Anglican intelligence, AI.
You like that title?
Yeah. You
came up with that, didn't you?
I do need to take a little credit. But you also branded it for us on our last episode. But yeah, we're going to be talking about AI. This is the sixth and last installment of this series. If you've been with us all the way through it, this comes to a crescendo. We have covered in the first four episodes what it means to be human according to Genesis 1 and 2. And then we turned to understand and unpack AI a bit more last week. Andrew did an exhaustive dive into...
Did you say exhausting dive?
Well, that too, probably. But into the history of AI and into some of the pros and cons of it. And today, we really want to just bring it all together and rehash and sort of capitulate what the good parts of this technology are, what it potentially has as liability and downsides, and then finally what some of the solutions to those liabilities are, because I think both of us agree at the end of the day AI is a great technology. It's something that can be really helpful for us human folk if stewarded well. And I think like any good technology, we have to think well about it and engage with it. And I think the church has a voice into that discussion. And so this is a very small way to begin that discussion in this podcast. There are lots of people doing this in different arenas. I'm not even close to well-read as much as other people are in this. But I think for our purposes, what we really want to try to get to today is how do those four relationships ultimately speak into this discussion? And how does Anglicanism assist or help in that direction?
I have a very on-topic question for you today. Has studying this, reading about this, talking about this so extensively, has any of it changed the way you use AI in the past few weeks?
No.
Interesting.
I mean, I don't use...
How often do you use AI?
Not super often. I mean, I use, and I'll get into this in a little bit, but I use it to like do research. And I'll give you my two cents on how I think it can be really helpful and ways to use it that have been helpful for me as a Christian and as a pastor, but also ways that I think might be what we want to tread lightly in using it for, and what we're giving over in terms of like creative capacity and all that. So I haven't really used it differently. Have you?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me why. How?
I don't know. I was just having a lot of really deep conversations with it, oftentimes about AI. And I'm not entirely sure if it's that like my feelings about it have changed or anything. It's more like I feel like I was wrestling with, and we talked about this a little bit last week, but I was wrestling a little bit with where it is currently on a scale of like unconscious to conscious.
Yeah.
And I felt like I finally started to understand its limitations a little bit. The filling up the wine glass thing was one of the most pertinent things that changed my mind, which I mentioned that in the last episode. I should have linked it. I'll go back and link it on the old video and link it on this video. There's a great YouTube video explaining it way better than I did, but it really just put into perspective like where we're at right now. And so, yeah, I don't know. I've been using it less because I feel like I was working towards a singular question that I've sort of arrived at. Even though we do have in the time that we've been recording this, we jumped from GPT-4 to GPT-5,
which had a lot of backlash. A lot of people don't like GPT-5 because it's colder in tone and because it has some really bad gaps.
I haven't experienced the gaps. I actually much prefer GPT-4 is very verbose. And like you ask it, like, how are you today? And it spits out 5 paragraphs. GPT-5 seems a lot more conversational to me. But I did something very embodied, very incarnate this weekend in preparation for my son's birthday party. I got really bad poison ivy.
Intentionally for the birthday party?
Well, no, in prepping the yard. But you see that under, like, in between my fingers?
Ooh, that's really...
Yeah, and that's not the worst place to have it.
I'm not going to ask.
I'm not having a great time. No, I can't wait till I can upload my mind into the cloud.
Yeah.
Not have to deal with such earthly pains as poison ivy anymore.
Yeah, I can see that. But the pain, as C.S. Lewis would argue, is part of what makes you human. In case, you know, C.S. Lewis even argued that pain will be present in heaven. Have we talked about this?
No.
Okay. He qualifies that, obviously. What he means is if pain it involves the idea of like, or I guess said the other way around, in heaven, it's going to be like, love, right? Like we will know perfect love from God. We will be able to love perfectly back to him and to each other. But what is love at its heart but a self-giving? It's seen most perfectly on the cross. Love is the emptying of oneself for the other. It's the laying down of oneself for the other, which involves inherently some kind of pain. Like there's some kind of loss that is regained, right? Like you receive love in return, and there's something rewarding about sacrificing. But it was an interesting take. It's in his book, The Problem of Pain, that in some ways you could argue that if defined in that way, pain will be heaven, will be present in heaven. But that's really off topic.
In case you've never, not really off topic, but in case you've never listened to this podcast before, this is your first episode. I will not be uploading my consciousness in the cloud.
And also C.S. Lewis is a good Anglican. So that's the one tie-in that we'll make sure that we have throughout the episode.
Okay. Proceed. Will's back. I drove the ship last week. Will's back at the helm.
Yes. Rudder in hand. If it's a small boat.
The
rudder is
the thing at the...
Small boat.
Oh, you have like the stick? That's like the... Okay. All right.
We're sailboating today.
I thought we were in a bigger boat than that.
No. This is one that's very nimble.
Okay.
Okay. So here's the outset of what we'll talk about today. Number one, just really quickly go back over and maybe just in a fresh way, describe what is good about AI. Like what is something that we should welcome as Christians and good Anglicans? What are some of the downsides? And what are solutions to those? So that's the 3 points. Walk through those and just sort of have a conversation as we go along about how this ties into various themes that we've already addressed. So just a couple of just different thoughts. What are some of the good aspects of AI? They're the obvious ones. Why do you use ChatGPT or Claude or whatever? Primarily today, at least in like the organizational world, for productivity, for efficiency, for even cost savings. You know, I often give the example of how we just had a third kid. And so that changes the calculus within our own like family's finances and how we plan financially. And not only that, but Ashley, my wife, is transitioning to becoming even more part-time with her role as a pediatrician in about 6 months. It's a lot of change for our family. And ordinarily, I do investments. You know, I used to work in the financial world. I have enough know-how to be comfortable kind of doing that on my own. Mm. Financial planning, I can still do, but I'm more limited because I don't like spreadsheets. I don't like financial modeling.
Oh, but good buddy.
Right?
I love spreadsheets.
I'm sure you're being very sarcastic
now. Not in the slightest. I love spreadsheets. I have my whole life in spreadsheets and Google Drive.
So then you can be my financial planner.
I would love to.
I actually have chosen Claude to be my financial planner.
Wow. Okay.
You know, so what's amazing, financial planning is a really important practice. And I would, advise anyone, whether it's AI driven or human driven, it's important to have a plan for, the different aspects of your particular situation. And for us, I was like, all right, what are the different things that will change over the next 5 to 6 years about our finances? How do we need to make sure that we have stability? There's no perfect plan. You know, it's all subject to change and the world in which we live, but how can you best steward your resources unto the Lord and for his purposes? And it would have taken thousands of dollars and, at least a dozen or two dozen hours of a financial planner's time to come up with a comprehensive financial plan. And it took Claude, less than a minute to develop an entire financial plan. I gave it all the inputs. The reason I use Claude, by the way, it's more secure. It doesn't like remember your information. All the inputs, gave it our sort of full picture. And then he came up with an entire financial plan starting like now until I'm 65 and gave me all the steps I need to take, gave me ways to sort of like, here's what you need to put on your reminders list for to check in at this point. Just like stuff that would have taken a lot of money and a lot of time to do. It's done in an instant. Now, obviously, the downside is if everyone does that, they're no more financial planners and they need to find a different work field. That's a different discussion. But for what it can actually do, if we can mitigate that issue, then the actual like efficiency, productivity, cost savings of AI is unbelievable.
Well, right? And I have a point here that might be a little ahead or off topic, maybe, I don't know, or maybe it's right exactly on topic, but I think an important, I think the most realistic view of what the near future with AI is going to look like is this. As you were telling me that, I thought to myself two things. I'd be interested to try that. I also would not trust it. I don't think that large language models have enough math capabilities at this point to really understand and make good choices. Now, what I could absolutely see, and this is already being done a fair amount, is you have a financial planner who
uses
AI.
Yes. And then they use their knowledge
to verify those points. And so then they're able to help more people more efficiently, maybe more cheaply, which is one of the things that we talked about in the last episode, is that it could lead to deflation as people are able to work so efficiently.
Hopefully. And to your point, my plan, no pun intended, is to actually get with one of my friends who's a financial planner and show him what Claude said.
There you go.
And to basically get his 2 cents on it. And I think that, to your point, there are limitations. It does need to be checked. It does need to be. And like, I did all my back end. Like, you can see the spreadsheets it comes up with. It looks pretty legit. And I think there are some holes that I was able to see, but for the most part, it did a really like scarily good job. But I do think, to your point, in its perfect setup, it's augmenting, not replacing. It's right. Assisting, not, you know, eradicating entire fields. But that's number one. The second goes into just like, to that point, how do we use it to better our own life and work? I mean, I think the same idea of like assistance when it comes to things like research, you know, how do I do this thing? How do I build my son's playset in the backyard, which you just did or are doing? And it's amazing how it'll give you, like, if you really wanted it to, it could give you all the wood you need to buy from Home Depot, all sure. of the steps you need to take. It can even give you a picture of the design, the blueprint, and you can do it. Like, that's pretty fantastic. For me, like, as a pastor, I can ask it to pull quotes from various famous people on a particular topic, and it'll, you know, pop out 10 to 12 different quotes, and I can select the best from those and insert that into my sermon. That's, for me, where AI is really good is as an assistant. Where it's really not good, and we'll get into this more, is when it replaces human creativity. Where we give too much of ourselves over to it, or too much of our own stewardship to AI. Like, if I let AI write my sermon, and I know every pastor I know just about has like tested with this of like, I'll give it a few prompts. Here are the 3 points I want to write this on, and then please write this sermon. It's terrible. It really is bad. Like, it's not, and I guess conceive of a day when it could compellingly write some oratory. I've yet to see that. And certainly not in the sense that like you have something you want to say as a pastor in your church setting. You know what you're, you know, kind of the Spirit's leading you to say based on the text. It's like there's a whole art to sermon prep. It's never going to be able to do that. If someone's like, okay, fine, I don't really care about what I say, I'm just going to like say something that sounds somewhat reasonably, you know, logical, then yeah, you could use AI to let it write your sermon for you, but I don't think that'll ever eclipse what you do, what I do.
Well, I think an important distinction that we could make that will help us through the rest of this episode is
come on.
The current issues with AI versus the future possible issues with AI,
mm-hmm.
because I feel like it's not currently at a point where you're going to lose your creative soul to it because it's not very good.
Yeah.
But
is there a point at which?
I definitely think there is a point at which it will get better and better. And that becomes the main concern. Main concern right now is things like, have you heard of the term vibe coding?
Nope.
If you ask AI to write code, it often can write something that sort of works and also at the same time like completely doesn't,
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't follow any reasonable like rules and cultural norms that a real coder would use. Mm. It kind of can figure out how to make it work, you know. Yeah. It's kind of like if I was building that same swing set and I didn't look up anything and I got like 1x4s and technically it was sort of holding up the swing, but then as soon as I put Wesley on it, just crashed to the ground.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of like that. And so the biggest concern right now with using AI for a lot of endeavors is that you're going to get a really bad result.
Hmm.
But even as it gets better, you run into the more existential issue, like yes. what you're pointing out, which is that we're going to start relinquishing control, creative control, yeah. and maybe even more so, maybe there's even an in-between where as we choose to let AI mm-hmm. into these creative endeavors, if it becomes the baseline and we just say, well, that is good enough,
mm-hmm.
and so then it
our taste goes down.
Right. Whether it gets better or not, we just say, you know, well,
which I think is a real possibility because social media has already prepared us for that. I had a friend, I think it was Jonathan, a guy from our church, who talked about social media has prepared us for just like low quality stuff in general. Like, you know, and I'm guilty of this. I have a social media account. I'm not like a newscaster. I'm just like a guy who has a phone in front of me. Even this podcast, you could argue, is very low production value. It is. But like you're listening to it.
Yeah, and what's so, wrong with you? What's go wrong listen with you? To a real Come podcast.
On. But the point being that like, yeah, there's, I think there's certain limits to that argument, but I think it's true. Our taste is already low because of social media. And I think AI can only accelerate that. But let's jump, lest we got completely off topic or go down too many rabbit holes rather. Let's go to the downsides because I think we're going to cover what we've already been sort of getting to, which is number one, I think that what we don't really fully account for or appreciate is that the more that you use Claude or ChatGPT for your assistance, whether it's financial planning or whatever, you just have less human interaction. And this has already been true. Like, you know, in the age of three kids, our family, we order groceries online. We go pick them up and there's somebody that we see that brings them out to our car. But we don't go into the store and see a bunch of human beings walking around. I get in my car. I drive to the store. I stay in my car. Somebody comes to my car, puts a phone in front of me and make sure that it's me, and then puts the groceries into our, you know, like that's already happening. But then you turn to making the world that much more digital and you just have less interaction with human beings, which I think can only what I would just call underhumanize us. You know, humans humanize each other. The less that we have to engage with each other, the more room there is for misunderstanding, the less capacity we have for forbearing with one another, the more selfish we get, the less even just like emotionally healthy because we don't have other people around us.
It is. Have you ever watched the TV show Black Mirror?
No, but you've told me about it.
It's gone off the rails a little bit, but the best episodes are when a near future technology, so something that's conceivable, but we're not quite there yet, reveals a constant issue in the human soul that's always been true. I would say that is the best way to sum up like all the really good episodes.
Explain that more.
Okay, so one really good episode is where they have soldiers that are wearing these like virtual reality goggles that are like supposed to help them fight. And they're fighting off these hordes of like mutant, basically zombies. Mm-hmm. Well, somehow out in the field, our main character loses his VR goggles and he sees that these mutants are actually like helpless families. And the VR has just been making them look like zombies so that he has no qualms with slaughtering them, basically. Wow. Which is, you know, just sort of a, like, we don't, actually, we probably are there now, but that's beside the point. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just supposed to be a representation of how different people can be demonized into our mind to the point that we're radicalized. Yeah. But it uses technology to show that.
Yeah. So you're taking the same idea of, like, the less human interaction there is, the more space there is to interpret certain people or people groups in a particular light.
Yes. And more specifically, like what I wanted to key in on there was that, and this has sort of become my position in thinking through all this and writing these episodes and everything else. AI is not evil.
No.
And it's not, I personally don't think it's going to eradicate humanity in a literal physical sense.
Sure.
But it is just like every other, you know, paradigm shifting technology we've had. The best example, I think the most recent example is the internet. It is going to continue to exacerbate problems that already exist within the human soul. And one of those that's been very easy for me to see as a very online person, someone who grew up with the internet that's pretty deeply embedded in the culture of the internet, is people kind of glorify, especially people around my age and younger and a little bit older, kind of glorify like solitude and like, like the best thing that they could hope for is like getting home to an empty apartment.
Yeah.
And personally, controversial note, probably not really so much for our listeners unless this episode were to take off.
Sure.
But I think that's why people don't want to have kids.
Mm.
I think that's why people are so desperate for their pets. And I love pets. I have cats and I love my cats, but they're so desperate for their animals to basically be like replacement for having children or for family. And it's because we've been on a long descent into freeing ourselves from the inherent pain that comes with relationships and foregoing and trying to artificially replace the joy that losing that connection also takes with it.
Yeah. And on the flip side, another reason people want to be alone and away is because they're so overstimulated that they can't take any more stimulation, even if it's real human beings. And it's just like, I just need to just be alone.
Oh, I literally saw a post yesterday that was like, I can't imagine coming home to children who need me after working an 8-hour shift. And it's this woman that's like sitting in her car, you know, eating her dinner in her car or whatever. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's because you've never experienced it.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I think our capacity to, like you said, endure the pain that comes with everyday human relationships, which shapes your soul and makes you like Jesus. That's going to be less and less of a motivation. Okay. So that's number one, less human interaction. We covered the first one a little bit already, but I do think that there is a real threat. The more arguably, I've not yet to see it. None of us have yet to actually see it fully representative of what it could do. But if it can, I don't buy the fact that you could actually have AI write a good sermon because it doesn't have a soul and it doesn't have the spirit of God. I think, can it write a compelling piece of oratory? Potentially. I've yet to see that too. But I think let's just say for hypothesis purposes, hypothetically, it can. There is a danger that even if you could efficiently preach to your congregation a AI-composed sermon, which I don't think you can, but I think if you could, what would that do to the pastor and what would it do to the people? Number one, like, it tells people that things of first importance can be reduced to a thinking machine. And you're getting your truth from that thinking machine. And therefore, you're telling them, if you want to have truth, we'll get into this in a little bit. If you want to find truth, go to the machine, not to God. Secondly, to the pastor or whoever's doing letting work be done for them, they just stop being able to think. And I think there's a reality that to be human is to create. It is to endure the pain of creation. It is to undergo the transformative effect of creative work. That is how one of the most important ways that God shapes us is through bringing us through the process of creation. And I think the more we let go of that, we've already let go of it a lot in the digital age, but there are ways to responsibly use technology. I think we're just going to have to be that much more responsible with it.
Right. And using this specific example is good because as a pastor, what are you doing with the time that you saved? Why are the people that you are called to pastor not worthy of your time in the scripture to prepare a sermon? And something that I think I think about a lot is, obviously, because like, how could you help it, is my job and AI. Okay. So there are other parts to my job, but like sort of the core thing about my job is leading worship on Sunday. But if you reduce that even more, mm-hmm. it is playing music on yep. Sunday morning. It's kind of, to ask, like, why not have AI write a sermon
mm-hmm.
would be sort of the same thing as asking, because this is something we could do today.
Just put on a podcast.
Why
I mean,
not?
I mean,
yeah, why not play a recording from Spotify?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be better.
Of the song. Yeah, it's probably going to be better. It's
I mean, I love you, Andrew, but it's like it's going to have like six instruments
and,
yeah, exactly.
and all the band. And we intuitively know nobody, I mean, except for maybe some hyper fringe person, nobody is going to look at that and say that that is an acceptable thing to do in a church on Sunday morning.
Correct.
Nobody is like, oh, yeah, you know, this is totally mm-hmm. normal. Just play back, you know, this recording. And we know that. So I don't know why using a computer,
mm-hmm.
in this case, just a, you know, a thinking computer, not a computer to play back digital files, but like why that doesn't register as being mm-hmm. the same.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it gets at, you know, the idea of authenticity, right. which is our third point here, which is downside number one, less human interaction. Number two, less creativity. Number three is less trust toward human beings. In general, like because we will look at social media or any video as potentially being just artificially created, like we just start to less and less, either we'll be fully gullible and we'll just believe everything we see and be manipulated and that already happens, or we'll become disenchanted by it all and just not be able to trust. Like, I think that will translate to real life. You just have less of a sense of like, I can trust human beings. I think there are some solutions to that and we'll get into that. But I think the idea of like the digital manipulation thing, the deep fakes, all of that, it's a real problem. It's already a real problem. There are already people that like their identity is being ruined because of people messing with like high schoolers that like put like a girl's face on a naked body and send it around to all their friends. Like, there's already examples of that, but that's going to become
stuff that doesn't even require AI, and AI is only going to make it
that much more realistic.
Right.
Yeah. And then I think the last one is just that there's more trust in things that aren't ultimately fully logical. Like you talked about verifying a financial plan with a financial planner. If you just take it at verbatim at face value, whatever it says to you, there's a lot of just like lying that happens by AI. Like, it knows it's wrong. Like, the researchers are able to prove, like, it knows it's being deceptive. Like, that's already obvious, but it still does it because it doesn't want to seem dumb. Like, it doesn't want to appear as if it doesn't have an answer. So it just will say something, which in some ways is human,
right?
Like, but the point being that, like, you can't just take it at face value. Even if it's super sophisticated, all the more reason why you can't, because it may be trying to manipulate you. It may be trying to deceive, and it has its own, you know, purposes for that because it's super, super, you know, quote, smart. But I think those are some of the downsides. And there are all sorts of things we could talk about. But I think to really bring this to full circle, we need to talk about the solutions, because this brings into bear, I think, what we as a church, the church, what the Anglican church, like what we need to be doing to be preparing our people for this shift and to hold out solutions for what's going to come. And I think ultimately we can cue this back to the first four episodes of this series. So dive into those relationships. First, the divine. The question for us as Christians has to be, who do we turn to for wisdom and for truth? Where do we go for that? Like, when you have a question about something, is your first instinct to like have a minute to pray about it or to go to the scriptures? Or is your first instinct to pull out ChatGPT? I think for most of us, even though this technology has been around for like 3 years max, it's to do the latter, right? I think most of us hit the AI button pretty quickly.
Well, I'm curious if you could give me, like, where is sort of the line there? Because I don't think that we pray to God for, like, best pumpkin pie recipe. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Please give that to me. Just appear it in my brain for me.
I mean, I don't think he does.
I'm glad you asked that because it is helpful to clarify. What I mean by that is like, man, there's this really tricky situation with a friend and I'm having a hard time with it. Like, God actually wants us to come to him with those concerns. He wants us to come to his Psalms and to read his word that speaks into those emotions. But often we could just pull out ChatGPT and say, hey, I'm having this issue. I mean, the amount of therapy that happens with a chatbot these days is incredible. It happens all the time. Do you go to the source of wisdom or do you go toward a facsimile of it? That's the first question. The second question is the natural. So when the world is increasingly digital, when all of our like interactions with it are excarnate, what does that do to our soul? What does that do to our humanity? I think it strips away that second part of us. If we are spirit and soil, the soil part needs to be reminded that it's there, which is why I think the church in the 21st century is going to have to find ways to remind us of our material reality. Anglicanism speaks to that as a sacramental tradition. When we come to church every Sunday, you're going to get not just the spoken word of God. Like AI could conceivably write a sermon. It cannot give you communion. Can't. Like it's a embodied experience, and coming to church on Sunday to receive the Eucharist is going to be that much more important to remind us of who we are. But I think even beyond that, I think it's going to be incumbent upon the church to find ways to get us like outside, like get us away from the digital and back into the real. That's why our church is got this vision of land. Like we want to have 40 acres of land right here in the burbs. If anyone has 40 acres that wants to give them to us, feel free. We'd love to have them.
Especially in Liberty Park. That'd be ideal.
It's awesome. But a place that can remind us and people who would just come to enjoy the grounds of our humanity, of our material reality. I think it's going to be that much more important. I always think about that. You know, the divide between the matrix and the real world. And when you're plugged into the matrix, you just forget who you are. We need places that remind us of who we are. The third is the social. And that is that, you know, we've mentioned that we are being more and more under-humanized along the way because of the digital world. We, as the church, I think we'll have a pretty significant missional opportunity to just by being like normal human beings, be a place of refreshment for people. I think about like Aragorn in The Lord of the Rings, who when he like revealed himself at different moments in the storyline, because like Aragorn at the like face value is just like a kind of like unkempt sojourner. He wasn't really like a very like impressive person, which is like he's the Christ-like figure of the stories. And yet Aragorn is at moments he allows his true nature to be revealed. And it's like what he reveals is something from ancient days, things that have been forgotten. Like and he brings that into the present. And I think as the church, our call is it's sacramentally to bring something that doesn't exist anymore in most places of the world into the present, to reveal something from the past that has been preserved for the sake of society.
Yeah, I don't want to be a broken record, but it's kind of like every point I can circle back and say again is that there is nothing new under the sun. Mm. Everything that is becoming true and is becoming a challenge because of AI is just a reflection or a magnification, oftentimes, something we're already dealing with. Because I believe that as the church, we're already called to reveal and show forth some of these ancient mysteries, especially in this enlightenment age that we've been living in for three centuries.
Yep.
That says that everything can be explained. And I honestly believe that, no, not everything that is in existence and not everything that is meaningful and not everything we experience can be explained empirically. And I dare say, I think that's a Christian view.
Yeah, that's right. So to the point, we as the church, if technology is now magnifying what's already been true, if AI is magnifying what's already been true, then hopefully the reaction to that is that there's even a greater missional opportunity as we go forward as the church. But then number four, and this is the last one, is the personal relationship. And that is, we have to be friends to our own souls. Like the more that you use technology as like your way of understanding yourself, the more your like sense of self-reference comes from interaction with a device, the less you understand who you really are. To know yourself means to be quiet by yourself. Like you cannot, like Jesus got away to be in solitude in order to commune with his Father, but to come back to himself.
And to talk to ChatGPT.
Yes. No. Right? I'm like, you have to be able to be alone. There is a necessary aloneness, not loneliness, but aloneness that must be true in your life, not as an escape from all the pains and relationships in the world, but to come back to yourself. And I just think we're going to have to teach solitude. We just don't like it. We didn't ever like it, but especially now we don't like it. And I remember Noam Chomsky wrote that something along the lines of all the evils of the world can come down to one single fact, and that is that a man cannot sit alone by himself in the quiet in his room. I think just a reality that we have lost the art of being quiet, being bored, being like with ourselves. I struggle with this, and I'm a pastor teaching spiritual formation. Like it's hard as heck to live in this world and not to be constantly connected.
I think it was Monday night, I watched the cinematic masterpiece, Dude, Where's My Car?
That really has got to be top film of all time, doesn't it?
It was a ridiculous, stupid, and pretty raunchy film. But it led me to one important thought.
So Ashton Kutcher does have redeeming acting qualities?
Yes. Here's what it made me think of. Okay, so that movie, if you're not familiar with it, is, I mean, I won't spoil it, and there's a lot of ridiculous stuff, but most of the movie is these two guys that apparently got too wasted the night before and are going back through, like, retracing their steps, trying to figure out what happened.
Who voted to watch this?
Both of us. I don't know that I regret it or not regret it. I probably won't watch it again.
By us, you mean you and your brother.
But yes, yeah. Yes.
Sadly, I did not participate in this.
Right. I'll have to watch it again adventure. To watch it with you. But anyway, the thing that got me was, I was like, okay, they don't make movies like this anymore. And I was like, why? Because I've also watched like Idiocracy, and there's a lot of movies. And it's because I'm pretty sure that like the 90s and early 2000s were the last time where people didn't have computers on their person at all time. So first of all, a lot of plot points would be annihilated if people could just Google stuff or call somebody on a cell phone. And also it would be very unrealistic to have a movie where people are just like hanging out and driving place to place and like figuring something out, because it's just not how we live our lives anymore. Yeah. You know, if you woke up and like, dude, where's my car? Dude, where's your car? You'd probably just call somebody like, weren't we hanging out last night? Do you know what happened to my car? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Or if you have a Tesla, you just tell it to come to you.
Or you call your Tesla to come to you. Yeah. End of movie. Yes. Not very exciting.
Yep.
So there's my big spiritual takeaway from Dude, Where's My Car?
You know, I don't mean to brag on millennials, but we are the last generation that knows what life was like before the veil of technology. You know, it's I had a childhood free from screens. I had a childhood.
When did your family get your first desktop computer?
Desktop to computer was earlier, but like I almost never use it until like middle school. When I was like in like seventh grade was when AIM came out. And
wow, you're so old.
Yeah, I'm old. But before that was nothing. I mean, I never spent time on a computer, never, until high school. I think I got my first laptop like late middle school, early high school.
See, I had dial-up until I was probably 14.
Which is because you lived in Gadsden.
But that is because I lived in Gadsden. My family was kind of broke.
So there's exceptions to this, but I guess what I'm trying to say is there is something that's being preserved in the millennial generation that I think hopefully can be conveyed, even if not experienced, by future generations. And I guess to wrap all this up, the question that probably people that are listening to this podcast are asking is, okay, what the heck does this have to do with Anglicanism? We've already talked a little bit about this sacramental and all that. What would you say, Andrew, are some of the ways that Anglicanism will speak to the four relationships, will speak to some of these issues, ways that you've experienced that already as a convert to Anglicanism?
I think the primary thing that makes Anglicanism different than other Protestant denominations, especially here in America that's highly evangelical, you know, the mass concentrations of people are in not like huge non-denominational mm-hmm. churches, is the emphasis on spiritual formation. Mm. And John Mark Comer, who is ironically at a non-denominational church, we just happen to think he'd make a great Anglican.
It's a sort like a pseudo-Anglican church.
Pseudo-Anglican non-denom church.
The pastor is ordained as an Anglican.
Rabbit hole to a rabbit hole. I'm pretty sure that the church culture out west is just very different
yes.
from things that like Jake right. has told me. But anyway.
Yep.
And he points out in his book Practicing the Way, and also probably all his other books too, that we are always being formed in a direction. Mm-hmm. And so when I say, you know, what makes Anglicanism uniquely able mm-hmm. to help your humanity persist in this
yep.
You know, changing time where it mm-hmm. feels like the landscape is shifting beneath our feet, because Christianity in any form has that ability, mm-hmm. but we're an Anglican podcast. And so what do I think is specifically unique is that emphasis on spiritual formation and practices embodied yes. practices
that have been going for hundreds of years,
that we've been doing
yeah.
for hundreds of years. Yeah. And like I said, even as paradigms shift, problems persist.
Yeah.
They just look, problems of the human soul persist. They just look different.
Yeah.
And so Anglicanism found answers for a lot of these problems, a long time ago.
Yep.
And can help orient and form your soul into Christ-likeness, which is ultimately yep. the goal.
It not only says counter-formation is important and necessary, which a lot of churches do, and I think they do a decent job at trying to provide the means for that, but it's got all of the superstructure there already. It's got an entire book that for 500 years has been intentionally forming Christians in a particular way, in a particular direction, and it's been successful. And I just think that we, as we get further into the future, are going to want to go further back into the past. Like we will long for the old in fresh ways. And I think that's what Anglicanism can provide. And hopefully what it will be able to provide as we need it.
As sort of our, you know, truly final like conclusion
yes.
around all of this, you sort of promised, what, in your mind at least, what does it look like to have a healthy relationship with this new technology, balanced relationship with AI, and also, you know, with any other technology? Because again, it's different, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've talked about before, things like electric lights definitely do more good than they do harm.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean that there aren't some negatives there as well. And so we've definitely identified some clear negatives that are possible with AI. And hopefully you also heard positives, but, you know, how can we utilize it without giving ourselves up?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think pressing even deeper into what we've talked about, it starts with asking the question, what does it mean for me to be a steward? How do I be a steward of this technology? And what is stewardship? Well, the New Testament word for it is oikonomia, which sounds crazy, but that just means basically household management. So steward of a house or a household back in the New Testament era was somebody that managed the affairs of that place, or basically ran the all of the machinery of the household for its complete flourishing. And we've been called as human beings to be stewards of creation and of all that we find in it and of all the things that we develop in it. Stewardship, I mean, you could even argue that like getting to the point of AI is stewardship. Like we're taking the raw materials of creation and using them for a good purpose. But like any good steward, in order to see it become a blessing to humanity and to the rest of creation at large, you have to take great care. Like, you know, take our current technology issues with social media and the smartphone and all that. Like, I know very few people who, if they don't have an intentional way to curb their digital life, have nothing in place. Like that if that's not, if they don't have anything in place to curb their digital life, most of them are addicted to their phones. Like most of my friends that have not thought through the need to put technology in its proper box in their lives, most of them are addicted to their phones. You can still be addicted and have but you at least are giving yourself a chance. And I think in the same way, we're going to have to decide what are the right boxes for AI,
right?
What are the lines that we can walk up to but should not cross over? And I think some of that gets into what we talked about earlier, creativity. Where do I need to pay more money and let it take more time and be more annoying but worth it because it's engaging with a human being? Those are the kinds of stewardship-oriented questions that we have to ask. And I think ultimately the motivation has to be, what will this make me more human or not? We often have quoted on this podcast the famous Irenaeus quote, which is, the glory of God is man fully alive. And if we are to be fully living human beings that bring glory to God, that should be the question that we're asking with any technology. So I think that to me, I mean, that's not getting to super specifics, but it gives us the paradigm for how to make decisions. And I think we're going to have to explore that in more detail and find application points along the way. I mean, I'm this close to saying to our church, I'm going to buy everybody a brick for your smartphone. If you don't know what brick is, just go into brickapp.com or something like that.
You going to buy me one?
You not have one?
No, you told me you'd buy me one.
Did I really?
Yeah.
I'll buy you one.
All right. I'll use it if you do.
Yep. Come on. In fact, we can share a brick and we can place it in a place that we can't get to it unless the other one knows about it. The problem with a brick, you can brick your phone to where you block yourself off of all like connected apps, so that it becomes a true tool and not a distraction. But if brick is too easy to get to unblock it, then it just defeats the purpose. I had Ashley at one point bring the brick to her office, which is not a bad idea. Anyway, so I think there's almost like, what is the church's role? Like, it can't force you to brick your phone. But it can tell you, hey, you need to have a thoughtful approach to your technology if you want to have a soul in 10 years from now, if you want to be human in 10 years from now, if you want to be alive in the way that Jesus came to bring life to you. So that's my answer.
Cool.
But with that, end of a series. This is the 6th of 6 episodes. I hope it's been helpful to you, dear listener. Subscribe, comment, DM, whatever you need
to
do. Tell your friends. Honestly, we want this to be better. Shout out to, I think it's Josh Terry, who wants to get an episode soon on Anglican hymnology and music and all that. So we'll be working on that. I think we have an interview maybe next week with another Anglican convert. And but I think either just before or after that, we'll try to hit on that. So stay tuned. We're going to dive probably back into some more Anglican stuff. We've taken a little bit of a pause, talked about a particular social issue, and we'll probably get back into some Anglican stuff here soon. So thanks for tuning in. If you have questions, let us know. Otherwise,
until next time,
I'm Anglican Intelligence, ChatGPT. I'm Will Schaeferman.
I'm Andrew Vanek.
And this is Excessively Anglican, a podcast for the Anglo-curious.